Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team, and remember to use promo code BELIEVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Believe in OK State podcast. Once again, Justin Southwell and myself, Megan Robinson, holding it down because Eve is God knows where. I don't know. He was box jumping like 4.5 feet earlier today, so maybe he's still in the gym trying to get higher.
Yeah, I don't know. Eve, not a true vert. You know, you had the extra load up step. So is it truly, you know, props anyway. It's good stuff. What's really impressive is, yeah, to be able to do that at our age, right? Because these knees have been through it. Yeah. But, you know, then you got Jamie Blatnick on the same platform doing it that much higher. So it's kind of like you just can't win.
I'm just at the age where there are some things like I don't need to know how high I can jump on a box. Like my shins have taken a beating. We are okay. I am content with my box jumping. I don't need to go to 3 or 4 feet.
Well, you never know whenever it might come into play. You know, somebody's, you know, not paying attention whenever you're crossing the road. And then all of a sudden you might have to jump vertically to get out of the way, and Eve will be ready and you may not be. All right, you know, so I'm just saying that that's one application of many that could happen.
Practical fitness right there. You never know. 2 hour listeners and more particularly our viewers, I just want to give you all a heads up. I gave Justin a heads up before we started recording last week. I was like, it's the allergies. No, it was not the allergies that made my voice an octave deeper. It's bronchitis. So I am getting over bronchitis. And the more I talk, the more it triggers my coughing. So if I just disappear out of frame or you hear Justin talking for an extended period of time, it's probably because I'm in the corner of my apartment trying to, you know, push down a coughing fit. So yeah, I'm trying.
You know, I can switch out my helmet in the back. Just get that bronc rider because it's like representative of bronchitis. Okay. That's it for this week's show. We'll see you later, guys. All right. Bye-bye.
Justin and his dad joke. So yeah, if I just disappear, I'm coming back after I have stopped coughing. I will try my best to mute everything. And, but thank you all for bearing with me. And Dale, thank you for your thoughts and hoping I get better. I saw that comment. I appreciate you checking on me. We're on the mend. I've taken more antibiotics this last week than I think I've had this last year, but we're improving. I just want to say too that Bixby sleeps on his bed in my room. He does not sleep on my bed. He sleeps on the floor in my room in his bed next to my bed. And I have literally woken up the last like 4 or 5 nights straight coughing. And I'm not exaggerating. I would cough for an hour straight. Fall back asleep for maybe 2 hours, wake up, cough for another hour straight in that deep, painful cough. And my dog Bix slept through the entire damn thing.
Unbothered.
He maybe woke up once. He doesn't like sneezing. If I sneeze, he gets very concerned. And I think maybe in like those 4 or 5 nights, he woke up twice and was sitting up looking at me being like, Mom, are you okay? But if I could have any superpower, it would be to fall asleep as fast as Bixby and sleep as hard as Bixby, because like a light.
Be a good one to have. Just catch up on your sleep just like that.
It's impressive as he's behind me on the couch right now snoring. But yes, well, if you'll cough.
There it goes. See? We don't even recognize. It's fine. We got the mute button and I'll talk over it. So
we're starting strong. Well, the big news this week in college football were some rule changes that the NCAA is adopting. One of the big ones, a couple big ones to talk about today, helmet communication systems that have been used by the NFL for years. This allows staff to communicate with one player on the field until the play clock hits 15 seconds and then communication shuts off. We all know that Coach Gundy loves his tempo offenses, that quick play calling, keeping it moving. Justin, how is this going to impact us for better or worse next season?
As far as I just really don't think it can hurt, right? I mean, being able to have the added communication, and then you don't have to worry about the signs and things like that that are relayed, and you don't have to worry about teams like Michigan stealing your signs and, right. So we're having good fun with that, but I don't think it'll necessarily be a bad thing for us. For tempo, really, it's kind of, we've gotten more in like a traditional sense of the offense. I think we've seen more huddling as of late. We've seen maybe we're not going as fast as we had been. So I don't know that it'll necessarily affect it in that way compared to what we've seen in the last few years. So I just expect it to be, you know, more along the lines of being able to get that communication, whether it's up from the top where you can, you know, see things from a bird's eye perspective and relay that down to the quarterback so he's able to see something that maybe he wouldn't be able to see. Or, you know, if the defense is lining up a certain way, you can remind them of, you know, potential blitzes or things to watch out for. So I think that'll all be good. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how quickly they're able to adapt to that new technology. It should be a lot of fun.
So obviously you would think that Bowman is going to be the guy on offense. He's a quarterback. Makes sense. Typically who has it in the NFL. Who on defense would you have where? I mean, I know my pick if you Nick Martin, because like,
yeah, I'd probably go with Nick Martin, you know, to be honest.
Or just Colin.
I could see Colin.
Yeah. Colin's just he's been a leader for his whole career. Sure. I mean, you know, the president of the Nick Martin fan club, but I love Colin too. But I mean,
yeah, either one of those guys, and being in that linebacker position to be able to, it's kind of the, in a way, you know, the quarterback of the defense. So it just kind of depends on whoever has the best, I think, the leadership qualities and the communication skills to be able to get it out to the team as far as what the look is, who's got who, where we're lining up, what's the coverage. And honestly, I don't even really know what all would go into that on the defensive side of, you know, they're lining up in here. You got maybe different tendencies to watch out for, and they can call those off. But I don't know, maybe in some cases, maybe that'll be a hindrance. You know, it's like, look out for this, this, and this, and you're expecting that to come, and then you get blindsided by something else that's completely counterintuitive to what you thought. So we'll see how it all works out. I mean, sometimes it's just going out there and being an athlete, trusting your instincts and not necessarily listening and for different things like that. So there's a fine balance with all of that, and hopefully our guys figure it out.
Something that I think will also affect the defense in a good way is that players will be allowed to use tablets on the sidelines so they can look at the game film in real time. Something, of course, you see in the NFL, players when they come off the field after the series, typically quarterbacks grab the tablet immediately and start looking at what went well or what went right or what went wrong on their last drive. I mentioned the defense is going to impact the defense for a positive because Coach Nardo was great at making second half adjustments on defense last season. How will they be able to adjust sooner through the use of the tablet and these new rules?
Yeah, it's the implementation of some of those adjustments might go into play quicker. So you're not going to be reliant on everybody meeting for 20 minutes at halftime and establishing a complete half of a game plan. And you can work on the fly a little bit. So the guys that know that defense inside and out, who are going to be able to adjust to certain schemes quickly, are the ones that are going to be successful in the defense. And you got to be able to trust that Nardo is, you know, working with the guys that, you know, they're capable of making those adjustments on the fly and being able to go from possession to possession rather than from half to half. So that's pretty exciting. I don't know why we haven't had that technology in the past. But hey, we're catching up. I mean, these are, you know, a couple of things that are good with college football right now. I think there's been a lot of kind of negative stuff surrounding, you know, realignment, positive or negative for NIL and things like that. So whenever you have the NCAA coming in with some of these rule changes, like, hey, you know, we're getting with it. So I don't know. That's great. But are we actually focusing on what we need to? Probably not, but let's go ahead and implement these now, I guess. So better now than never.
I like these two rule changes. I think that they help all teams, you know. I think that they will be good for all teams, like you said earlier, Justin, with the play calling, no sign stealing, anything like that. I think just communication just helps people function and work no matter what business you're in or what sport that you play. The next rule, one of the final big rule changes this season is that college football will start implementing a 2-minute warning. And this one, I don't love so much. A, because it means another commercial break. And college football games are already 3 to 3.5 hours long, sometimes pushing 4 hours. And that is a long game. We need less commercials, more action. Also, you look back at this season, OU, in our game against OU, they called a timeout with 1:59 remaining to go to, you know, before we punted the ball to give them their final possession. If you have a 2-minute warning, OU can save that timeout. And I believe that was their last timeout. And they would have been able to use that on their final drive after the 2-minute warning. So you're looking at that fourth down play. Do they run a different play? Do they call the timeout to stop the clock, draw up a good fourth down play? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. But I would like to think in that situation, regardless of timeouts or not, you're going into that game plan with the, you know, these are the plays that we know we're going to use to get a first down here. So I don't know that changes too much, but to your point, yeah, being able to kind of have that as potentially something that will change the outcome of a game because you're able to use the 2-minute warning to your advantage to have it as an extra timeout in a sense. I mean, that's really what it is. So yeah, I don't love the aspect of having yet another commercial break, but we are having, with some of the rule changes that took place last year, where the clock continues to run and we're not stopping on every first down, I think that hopefully that'll help speed things along. We'll get more into a groove with that. The biggest thing for college football, it seems like, is whenever guys go down with a fake injury and then they're just stopping the clock, no timeout is called, but they take their time, they come off the field, and then sure enough, there they are again, like 1-2 plays later. And I wish they would address that, you know, to be able to say, yeah, if you go down with an injury, you're done for that drive. You can come back in the game if you're feeling better, but for them to be able to, you know, stop the clock the way that they do, like, we got to get that stuff out. But yeah, I mean, overall, though, I think it's a positive thing. And just to be able to have the 2-minute warning so that we do have that set time where it's like, all right, clock is going to stop after every first down now moving forward because we're past that 2-minute mark. And again, it's only at the end of the second quarter and fourth quarter. So we don't have to worry about that happening for every quarter. So I don't think that it'll delay the game too much. And I think that this is one of the rules that makes sense to align yourself with the NFL a little bit more.
I just think it's going to be one of those rules too, where like having play calls in your ear, in your helmet is not really going to change your game plan. You know, you're just going to be able to get them better. And having the tablet to review the play and make adjustments is going to change your game plan, but you have halftime. And when the defense comes off the field, you can huddle your defense up and talk to them. Same with the offense. Like you have those things. I just think that you see it so much at the NFL level where there's a 2-minute drill for a reason, and you get the ball back with the 2-minute warning and 2 or 3 timeouts, and you have all day to march down the field. Right. And like you said, Justin, like, yeah, the clock stops in college after the first downs, but it doesn't stop for a second or third, you know? So it's like, I just think that this is something that teams are going to have to very much adjust to, because that's an extra timeout,
right?
Essentially. And you can reset and regroup, and it does change the pace of the game. I mean, it's one of those things where when you're watching an NFL game and you're like, okay, we want to run out the clock so that we can punt after the 2-minute warning instead of before the 2-minute warning, because then you're able to drain the clock more. Just those little things. I think that this is the rule that's going to impact coaches' game plans more than you realize, because that extra timeout matters.
Yeah. And I don't think it'll be a major deal for all the games, but some case, yeah, it can come up and bite you. You just got to be prepared for it. As a coach, as a player, you got to know that that's an extra thing, an extra wrinkle into the game now. So prepare for it and really, you know, hope for the best in some cases. So a lot of times there's not a ton you can do. So you just got to take care of business in the other 58 minutes of the game.
This is one of those rules where when it benefits us and like we have, when we get the ball back at 2:01, it's like, yes, I love this rule. But when we punt at 2:01, it's like, damn it.
Starting to wonder what kind of hidden advantage Gundy can find with all this new type of stuff. Like, what are we going to do with the helmet communication? It's a little bit different than everybody else. And how are we going to be able to utilize that timeout? Maybe we'll see what he comes up with, but he's probably got something in the works. Maybe not. You never know. Hey, let's just go. This is pretty even across the board. Everybody is impacted in the same way. I wouldn't expect him to come up with anything, crazy genius behind the scenes for something like this.
I just look at all of our close games last season and think about how this rule could have shifted those things. So it'll be interesting. I mean, is it a complete game changer? No, I just think it is going to take, it will impact the game plan for sure in those close matchups. Well, guys, we've been talking about the 12-team college football playoff for 2024. And we're not even in season yet, and we're already talking about how we're going to expand yet again when this contract is up after the 2025 season. They're talking about expanding to 14 teams. When will it stop, Justin? When will it freaking stop?
I don't know, but it needs to stop now. Like, it's already annoying. Like, how have we not figured this out yet? And just like, goodness, some of the stipulations they're throwing in here for it are driving me crazy. I'm like, make it make sense. What is automatic qualifiers because you're in this conference? Okay. Like, what?
Yeah. Let's talk about that. So for our viewers and listeners who have not read the articles on this 14 team playoff expansion, because why would you? We haven't even gotten to the 12 team yet. Here's some of the qualifications that have been proposed for this new model, which would, in theory, kick off in 2026. 14 teams, 3 automatic spots for the Big Ten, 3 automatic spots for the SEC. Those two teams, those two conferences, would receive byes in the first 2 rounds. Then ACC and Big 12 each get 2 automatic spots, 1 for a Group of 5 program, and the 3 remaining spots would be for at-large bids. Now, we got to look out for Notre Dame, okay? Because we need to make sure America's Sweetheart gets in somehow. So they would earn a spot if the selection committee ranks them in the top 14 on selection day. And my question is, Notre Dame, why don't you just play in the ACC like you do in literally every other sport? And then if you could be one of those two teams. But again, Justin, to your point, why are we just being like, sure, Big Ten and SEC, you guys can be guaranteed 3 spots. Like, what?
I don't understand it. And why do we have buys in the first 2 rounds? What is this? who is making this decision and who's agreeing with this to say, right. Oh yeah, this is logical. This is very smart and it makes sense. Number one, 14 teams is a dumb number for a playoff. 12 is already kind of like, okay, like why didn't we stop at 8? But we'll go to 12 and have 4 teams with a bye in the first round. Okay, let's move to 14 now. No, what? How about you figure out what it looks like with 12 teams first? And let's see how that plays out before we decide to make a switch again and say 14. What if it makes more sense to do 16? So what are we doing throwing out this 14 team model without like really thinking it through? And the only thing that I can think of is that the people that are making the decisions are trying to bend it how they can to give themselves an advantage in the event that they're not worthy of being in the top spot, because that's really what it comes down to. Like this last playoff that we had, for example, the SEC wasn't able to get in the top 2 spots. So let's see what we can do to bend the rules to make sure that SEC is guaranteed a top 2 spot in the playoffs moving forward, because we can't have this happen again. We need to be able to make sure that they have the clearest path to the title possible so that we have the SEC representing in the Big 12 or in the national championship. So I don't know. It's just the people that are making the decisions right now, I don't understand it. It's not necessarily the best move for college football, because you're looking out for a specific conference or two. And just because you don't have that label next to your name, you're SOL in some cases. Like, what is the point? What are we doing? Well, what are we even doing?
Gundy spoke out. Someone asked him about it last week. He said, based on the premise proposed, a team could be undefeated and ranked number one in the country and still not receive a first round bye because teams were awarded one before the season even began. He continued, we need to let the teams decide it on the field and reward those who are the most deserving. And that's in reference to the Big Ten and the SEC teams being guaranteed the byes based on their, you know, they get 3 automatic bids and everything. And I'm like, I don't understand why. Like,
Gundy's saying this. Other college football coaches are saying this. Other college football media people are saying this. The only people like that actually are in favor of this model are the people in the room making these crazy proposals. And like, gauge how it's looking for the people that love the sport and make your decision based off the people that actually care about this stuff. Because whenever you go in and you're doing this, you're ruining the integrity of the college football playoff, which is already something that we haven't had in forever. And now that we're finally getting it, you're trying to twist it from what is like, there's a way to do it. We have it in literally every other level of football, high school, NFL, and you have to make it special for college football. It doesn't need to be special. Just do the same stuff that works.
Well, I also just want to acknowledge, okay, so I went back and I looked at the standings for the conferences after the 2023 season. So by this model, Michigan, Ohio State, and then Penn State or Iowa, because there were some tied records and I didn't get into tiebreaks or anything. So let's just say Iowa, because they played in the Big Ten championship. So Michigan, Ohio State, and Iowa, Alabama.
Can we just pause for a second before we even go to the SEC? Do you see why a 14-team playoff is stupid already?
I don't even think that the 14-team playoff is stupid. I think that the Big Ten is guaranteed 3 teams, because you're telling me Iowa deserves to be
exactly
in there over. It has nothing to do with 14 teams. It's everything to do with Iowa or Penn State. Like Penn State, they did not have a good end of their season. Like you can't tell me that they, again, I would need to look at the extended, like the final rankings for, pulling them up right
now. And that's a good point. It's not necessarily a knock on 14. That's a personal thing and I'm attacking that. But if we're talking about guaranteed spots for the Big Ten, just because they're the top three in the Big Ten, like that third team does not belong. I'm sorry.
Well, Penn State, okay, so Penn State finished 13th in the country in their final rankings last year, but Iowa played in the Big Ten. So again, I would have to look at where it was at the end of the season and all of that. So,
sorry, but they were 13 before the bowl game or after?
After the final okay. Season rankings, Penn State was 14. But the only team of those teams to win their bowl game was Michigan. And they won it all. Ohio State lost. Penn State lost. Iowa lost their bowl games. So, like, okay. Like, so my point, though, is that why does the Big Ten deserve that when those top teams, those top four teams in the Big Ten, only one of them won their bowl games, and that was the national champion?
Yeah. And it's becoming increasingly more difficult to gauge that because – I don't know how many people from Iowa or Penn State, opted into the bowl game. There might have been a ton of seniors on either one of those teams that decided that they didn't want to play in the bowl game because it was meaningless to them. And that's what we ended up with at the end of the year. I don't know. Like, for example, the 2021 season when we played Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl, we considered that like one of the greatest Oklahoma State victory of all time, the biggest comeback in school history. But then I look back on it and I'm like, how many Notre Dame seniors opted in for that game? Were they at full strength? Like, should we really count that as?
Yes.
Because I'm looking all the way back to like what we did in 2011 when we played Stanford in the Fiesta Bowl. And I know that they had all those guys and it was a very meaningful bowl game back then. And I want to consider that to be the number one game for Oklahoma State because we just beat, you know, the number one overall draft pick and Andrew Luck. And, you know, just it's tougher to gauge moving forward all because of the opt-outs and things like that. So I'm just saying, like, how can we determine this is like the legitimate ranking for this team at the end of the year? And should they be deserving of going in based on all that? So tangents, distractions. I can only talk for so long, Meg. This is fun. But going back to it, you made it. Okay. We're back.
Woo. We're here. No, and I see your point, but then I look at the Georgia Florida State game where Georgia just demolished Florida State and all those guys are like, we came back because every game's important. So I understand that, but all I have to work off of is last year's rankings. But Iowa lost 35-0 to Tennessee in that bowl game. But then moving down to the SEC, it would have been Alabama and Georgia. Those two, 100%, I would agree with. Missouri. Now, Missouri also had a great season. And Alabama was the only team to lose their bowl game. Georgia, Missouri, and Ole Miss is Missouri and Ole Miss had the same record. But again, like, I'm not convinced that, like, not that they don't all deserve to be in there, but they should not be guaranteed. Like, if you want to guarantee the top one, and then if the others make it in based on their ranking, fine. I have no issue with that, especially Missouri and Ole Miss this season. They were good.
Exactly. Yeah.
To guarantee them three spots at the top. No, no. Like, what are we, cause then you look at, you know, it would have been us in Texas. Texas made it to the college football playoff this season. And then from the ACC, it would have been Florida State and Louisville. Both those teams lost their bowl games. We all know the Florida State story. Louisville was like up and down all season, thought they might be good at the end, whatever. But yeah, I just think like if you want to have the Power Four, because they're going to be down to Power Four, if you want to guarantee the champs of the Power Four conferences a spot in the college football playoff, if it's a 14-team like expansion, I have zero issues with that. None at all. Group of five, highest ranked group of five person, no issue with that. But to guarantee conferences X number of spots when their teams might not be that good, no. I want to see if you're going to expand to 14 teams, give me the best 10 because you get the four from the conferences. And what if you had a year like, I'm sorry, love Oklahoma State. We weren't better than Texas this year. Even if we had won that game, I still think Texas was the better football team as a whole, like on paper, the better team. But if we won, we're still Big 12 champs. Okay, put us in there. Fine. But then give me the next 10 next best teams. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think if Oklahoma State would have beaten Texas in the Big 12 championship, it's like they set themselves apart at that point and they're deserving of playoffs, conference championships, conference championship teams probably deserve to be in the playoff in the vast majority of cases. The only thing that I can think of where it would be kind of ridiculous is if we're looking at the Big Ten again, because this is the only scenario I can feel like this would actually happen. Let's say it's Ohio State versus Iowa or Wisconsin, and Ohio State is dominant all year, undefeated, and then they match up against like an 8-4 Iowa team who just happens to, I don't know, intercept the ball 7 times and they win a close one. It's like, all right, maybe you deserve to be in the playoff because you just beat the number one team in the nation. But I mean, we still gotta, like, what a mess, you know? That just makes it's just chaos at that point. So yeah, it would be a weird deal. It's kind of like, how can you keep out a conference champion whenever they just beat arguably the best team in the nation? You probably should put them in.
Well, no, and that's my thing with Oklahoma State. Like, I think even if the conference champion is, well, if we had beaten Texas, we would have been 10-3, correct? Yeah, we would have been 10-3. And it's like, that's still a very, very, very good record. Like, that's a very good record. And we would have 100% deserved to be in an expanded 12 or 14 team playoff. Like, absolutely put the conference champion in. But like you were saying in the Big 12, or not Big 12, Big 10, there have been scenarios in recent years where like a 7-5 team is playing in the Big 10 championship, because we know the one division with Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State is stronger than the other division within the Big 10. So it's like, okay, if you win your conference, I think you are like, yes, that's what you get for winning your conference. Isn't the same with basketball? If you win your conference, you get in. If you're like a
power five. And basketball too. I mean,
yeah,
a little bit different, but
yes,
you're a lot more likely to catch fire, I think, in basketball, and you can go on a really good run.
Right.
But it's maybe a little bit harder in football, but yeah, to your point. Yeah. Even if you just lay an egg all season, and for whatever reason you catch fire and you win your conference championship, you get to go to the big dance.
Yeah. But also, like I'm saying, you know, if we beat Texas this year and got a guaranteed, it was under the 12 team playoff, let's say that was implemented in 23. If we beat Texas, we get the automatic bid. Texas is also very much deserving of one of the remaining spots, the at-large spots. You know what I'm saying? So like there's definitely room or avenues for the Power Four conferences to have 2, 3, even 4 teams if they're the best teams in college football. But no conference should just be guaranteed 3 spots because they're the SEC or they're the Big Ten. Like, no.
Yeah, and sometimes that's even overlooked. It really does come down to, I guess we'll call it the eye test, making the right decision in those cases, because not last year, but the year before, TCU did not win the Big 12 championship. And then they were still allowed to go to the 4-team playoff, and they beat Michigan.
Yep.
So whenever they're legit, I mean, that really did come down to, they lost on, they lost a heartbreaker in Arlington. It was really close game, and they lost that game, but for the whole body of work that they put in all year, there was another argument to be made. They deserve to go. And then they proved it by beating Michigan. Yeah.
Well, College Football Playoff Executive Director Bill Hancock said a few weeks ago that there was a need for this deal to be done for a new CFP contract within the next month. So they are hoping to have this decided by the end of March. Why, guys? Why? We haven't even seen the 12-team model work out, but I think it's because of money, because the TV contracts have sort of been decided. And starting 2026, ESPN will spend an average of $1.3 billion on the playoffs for six seasons. So yeah, money talks, and that is definitely encouraging the playoff picture in 2 years.
Money, money, money.
Well, Justin, speaking of money, I said I was going to ask, and I'm going to do it. Okay.
Oh, so here we go.
The other day on TikTok, someone named Ricky Sanford posed this question on TikTok. If you were given the choice, if someone said, I will give you $1 million right now, you can walk away, you're a millionaire, or you can flip a coin for $1 billion, would you guys take the million or flip for a potential billion? Justin, Eve, and I were all torn. So we want to know what you guys think in the comments. Eve was all about take the money and run. He said, I'm not playing. Give me my mill. I said, I think I'm flipping a coin, because the difference between a million and a billion is unreal.
It's a lot.
A lot.
Like, it's a 50% chance at increasing your wealth by, I can't even do the math. It's a lot. So I would also flip a coin, and I would hope that, you know, I'd get that billion, because let's put it this way. I'd go out and buy a house for, let's say, $2 million. Okay. So my house is already worth twice as much as what Eve walked away with in his million. And then I still have 998 million to do whatever. I can donate a lot to Oklahoma State and NIL and still have a lot left over. So give me the chance, that 50-50 shot, flipping the coin, I'm taking the billion. Let's go.
They'd be calling it the Justin Southwell Field at Boone Pickens Stadium.
No doubt.
Yeah, there's like a graphic or a thing, and it's like 1 million seconds is about 11 days. So you could, if you counted nonstop for 11 days, you could hit 1 million seconds. 1 billion seconds is 31 years. That's the difference. 31 years. Like, our players on our football team are 10 years away from living 1 billion seconds. Like, they haven't even lived 1 billion seconds left yet. That's crazy. That's so much money. That's so much money. Granted, like, if I got $1 million right now too, I'd be so happy with a million. I just think, Justin, you said it in the text, like, you can work to earn $1 million. You can't, like, becoming a billionaire is.
Yeah. It's next to impossible.
Yeah. Like, just because Eve asked us that question. He was like, about the $100,000, or would you flip a coin for a million? And I was like, you know what? I might take the $100,000, because the difference between $100,000 and a million is not nearly as vast.
Yeah. It's all about, yeah, the distance between those two numbers, because it makes more sense to risk it in that case. Yeah. And yeah, it'd be a bummer if you walked away with nothing, but like I said, you can still work your way up to a million. Like, a billion is not something you're going to be able to attain. So might as well flip for it.
Now, if it was like, you can walk away with a million or flip, like basically double or nothing, I would take the mill and be happy. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. I'm not, we're good.
For sure.
That difference. So guys, I'm interested to hear what our listeners and viewers have to think. Let us know in the comments if you would flip for a bill or walk away with a mill. Sorry. Had to rhyme there. All right. It's coming, guys. Coffee's coming. So we're going to wrap this thing up before I just have a full-on attack, because I'm struggling right now. Thanks for listening to the Believe in OK State podcast, presented by Bet Online. Like, share, subscribe, follow, rate, review, all of the things. He's Justin Southwell. I'm Meg Robinson. Eve might be back next week. I don't know. It'll be a surprise to all of us. Go Pokes.
Go Pokes.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.